You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, January 30th, our new one-hour edition. As I told you last Friday, no longer, at least for the time being, 6 to 8, will be 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern Time live, and then replayed throughout the day, and then also on podcast. Just trying to get a little bit more balance in my life between my full-time work and my family life and this radio gig, so thanks for understanding. We'll try to make it worth your while, try to pack as much into this 1 hour as we can. Hope you had a great weekend. Mine was pretty laid back. This coming weekend, I've got an engaged couple retreat I'll be on, so tried to enjoy a little bit of this as much as I could. Got my son back from the March for Life in Washington, D.C. He had a great experience there. Thanks for keeping him and all the other marchers in your prayers. We're going to have two guests coming up this hour. The next segment, the Reverend Mark Woods. He's a Baptist minister from England who is the editor of the magazine called Christian Today. Not Christianity Today, but Christian Today. I talked about a piece that he wrote last week, which I thought was pretty fascinating. Can a robot sin? How artificial intelligence is challenging Christian ethics. As I said, you know, I certainly have heard of the driverless cars and all that, and, you know, sci-fi depictions of artificial intelligence. I had no idea that in real life things were advancing as quickly as they were and raising theological issues. When robots began to act somewhat autonomously, is it possible for them to sin? And raises a whole list of thorny ethical questions. Mark Woods will help us with those. And then at the bottom of the hour, we'll be pleased to have Amy Howe. It's been a while since we've had Amy on. Amy, who is an independent contractor with the SCOTUS blog, which SCOTUS stands, of course, for the Supreme Court of the United States. Amy has written about what's generally considered the definitive list of the three candidates Donald Trump is mulling over or will announce on Thursday, his pick to fill the vacant seat left by the deceased Antonin Scalia. I guess Justice Scalia has been, I need to check on that, it's probably been about a year since he passed away. And then there was all the hubbub about his replacement. President Obama at the time, I think, was it Merrick Garland, and the Republicans saying, nope, we're going to wait till the election and so forth. Well, the election's here. Let's find out a little bit more. So Amy Howe, who is a law professor, and she also has her own blog, but she'll give us the lowdown on the three judges generally considered to be the favorites to be nominated for that empty seat. We'll also talk about the Gospels a little bit today. We may review a little sports. I think with the one-hour show, maybe we'll do what were you thinking, sometime during the program. And, of course, we'll spin up the Dial Catechism wheel, all that and more in the program. If you want to call in anytime during the hour, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4 is the number you can call or text anytime during the show. Or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. I did get a chance to see over the weekend on Saturday, and I wanted my wife to see this, and it had left the theaters, but now that it's been nominated for a Best Picture Oscar, sometimes theaters will then bring a movie back, and so the movie Arrival. I'm telling you, if you've not seen this film, it is a phenomenal piece of storytelling. In my mind, and I know sometimes we're under the tyranny of the most recent thing we've seen, but I don't know that there's a movie that has ever impacted me to the degree that Arrival has, that leaves you just stunned in your seat after it's over. Now, I'll readily admit, not everybody has the same experience. Tomorrow, my guest will be Rick Becker, who's been on the program before. Blogs at God Haunted Lunatic. He's somebody who's a profound Catholic thinker. Rick Becker went to see the movie Arrival and did not have the same experience. So maybe it's just me or my family. But I'm telling you right now, if you haven't seen the film, you need to go see it. And so many different layers of really existential questions, stuff that stirs, I think, the Catholic imagination as well, understanding of revelation, of the sacramental imagination, of suffering. And I just can't say it enough. Go see it. Run, go see it. Yesterday, I was sitting in Mass and was listening to our pastor talk about the gospel reading for yesterday. Now, the beautiful thing is, when we talk about the lectionary readings in the Mass in the Catholic Church, these things aren't decided last week or 2 weeks. This gospel reading for whatever Sunday, let's see, what Sunday of Ordinary Time was it? Fourth Sunday in Ordinary Time, year A of the lectionary cycle. They're set a long time in advance. But here on the heels of one of the most probably intense weeks in presidential politics. I mean, Donald J. Trump has jumped in with both feet with a relentless array of presidential decisions, executive orders, shifts in policy and mood. It is stunning. There is no doubt. But I couldn't help but note the gospel reading yesterday, which lists the Beatitudes. When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain. And after he had sat down, his disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they who mourn, for they will be comforted." You know how they go. "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the land." My pastor said what may be the understatement of the year, you know, these Beatitudes are a hard sell in our world. I mean, this is where we really have to. There was a book a number of years ago, Philip Yancey, an evangelical Christian, wrote called "The Jesus I Never Knew." And he talks about an experiment that he did when he was teaching religion in a Christian college. And he told his students, he wanted them to read the Sermon on the Mount as if they had never encountered anything from the Christian faith before or Jesus before, and give their reaction to it. He said it was something else. He said the Sermon on the Mount, which begins and opens with these Beatitudes, made them angry, which actually made him as a professor happy, because it told him that they were rediscovering a bit of the scandal of Jesus' words, how his words divided, because they challenged the accepted norms of what we consider to be the blessed life. I mean, this atmosphere we're in, and we've always been in this, right? I mean, think about who we honor, who we admire, who we envy, who we want to be like. It's not the poor in spirit. It's not those who mourn. It's not the meek. We want to be winners, man. I started thinking about, you know, what would be the value system largely of the world that we live in. Blessed are the rich, for they get to do what they want. Blessed are the winners, for everyone loves them. Blessed are the successful. They will get what's theirs. I mean, that's really the Beatitudes, quite honestly, down deep within ourselves we believe in. And I'm not just talking about outside the church, sometimes even inside the church, even in our institutions. The people that we admire are the very people who are the polar opposite of the type of people Jesus talked about. It was such a complete reversal and upending. And this is the danger, I think. And I took some hits this weekend for posting my concerns about this current presidential administration, that pro-life people, of whom I consider myself to be one, were so tired of being what seemed to be on the outs of the prior administration. And finally, with a president in who actually affirms us and makes comments about the March for Life and sends his vice president out there, it's great to be winning, man, because the winners are blessed. We're attached to somebody who gets his way. The danger, of course, is we turn a blind eye, I think, to other things that he's doing and a value system that in other places is completely contradictory to human dignity. That's my concern. And if it gets me in some hot water with some folks, well, then so be it. And believe me, I know my own temptation, my own tendency to want to be in on the in crowd, to want to be a winner. Believe me, I have no doubt that my pride in being right gets mixed in with all that. But I would just say we need to be very, very careful in terms of we don't sell our birthright for a mess of pottage. Are there some things that El Presidente has done so far that I think are worthy of affirmation? Absolutely. It's great to get recognition for the March for Life. Other things, deeply troubling, in my view, demagoguish. And we better watch ourselves. We'll be back. We're going to talk to the Reverend Mark Woods of Christian Today about artificial intelligence and ethics. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Fifteen minutes past the hour, we're back on the Mike Allen Show here on this first day of the week and almost the last day of January, one day to go, January 30th today. We are currently efforting the Reverend Mark Woods of Christian Century. I'll go ahead and give you the question of the day if you're interested in calling in today's show, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, emailing me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. Saw over the weekend Roy Williams, the University of North Carolina head coach, who is having a little bit of a struggle this season with his Tar Heels, how he picked up a chair and threw it in their loss to the I think it was the Miami Hurricanes at home. Alex, I think we're going to want to call him through Skype. Use that number I sent you over there. Anyway, so he threw a chair, and then I saw where Enos Kanter of the Oklahoma Thunder punched something and broke his forearm. And it got me thinking about losing your temper on sporting events. Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever broken something or broken a bone, whether in your own personal sporting event or maybe watching your favorite team? You know, I've heard of people punching their TVs, all kinds of sorts of things. This is time to come clean. I can't grant you absolution, but I can let you confess. 573-4-BREAD-4. 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com. I believe that may be, well, we're trying to get the Reverend Mark Woods. We'll see. Hello, is this Reverend Woods?
Yes, it is.
Hello. How are you doing? We're having some technical difficulties. Glad to finally get in touch with you.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, that's no problem. Yeah. No problem at all. I'll go ahead and introduce you. Mark Woods is the managing editor of Christian Today and also a Baptist minister, and you're in London, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Fantastic. Tell me a little bit about Christian Today.
Oh, well, it's an online news magazine website. We have features, opinion pieces, news stories, that kind of thing. It's lots of fun.
Well, this article is the first time that I've encountered it, of course. I'm used to Christianity Today, so great to come up and find a new publication. This article about Can a Robot Sin? How Artificial Intelligence is Challenging Christian Ethics. I think I had no idea that this sort of technology was advancing as quickly as it is. Bring us up to speed as far as you know in terms of where we are with artificial intelligence.
Well, it's interesting. It's usually thought of as the province of science fiction, I suppose, and you know, all the way back to 2001, A Space Odyssey in 1968, you have this intelligent and self-aware computer. But things have moved on so fast, particularly in recent years. So, for instance, you've got computers which can play chess and defeat the greatest of human chess players. But more than that, it's robots who are actually able to make their own decisions and within certain parameters to decide what to do. And this throws up all sorts of interesting moral questions, because how do they know what the right thing to do is? One of the particularly concerning areas is over position of robots, or battlefield robots, which might be armed with weapons and sent out into a battlefield terrain with instructions to take out the enemy. Now, how does it know who are the enemy? Questions like that are really important, really interesting.
It's, we have this tendency, I guess this has always been the case, when it comes, certainly Christianity is no enemy of science, despite the popular conception, but sometimes we think that because we can do something, we automatically should do something, and our technology runs ahead of our ethics. So it's good to raise these questions now. And you said there's actually a group of investors who are putting their money into it.
Yes, that's right. They're putting about £27 million, actually, into a fund which is really designed to answer questions like this. And the fund is called the Ethics and Governance of Artificial Intelligence Fund. And it's being overseen by the Media Lab at MIT, and also an organization at Harvard University. So this kind of question is being discussed at a very, very high level indeed. And the idea is that you actually start thinking about the humanities and social science. You bring in philosophy and questions about right and wrong into how robots, how artificial intelligence actually works. And the idea is that it should serve the whole of human society rather than the interests of a small group of people.
And it's not like, I mean, as you sort of point out and hint at there as well, when they design these robots, it's not like they're working from some sort of a, you know, tabula rasa or something. I mean, they are bringing, those who design the robots probably, you know, bring their own particular moral perceptions to the task, particularly like you raised the issue, which I hadn't thought about. Let's say you have these self-driving cars that are programmed to avoid accidents. But sometimes they may face a choice between which of two accidents to allow. There's got to be some moral apparatus that guides the robot in how to make that decision.
Well, that's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because you might be faced with a situation in which a human being would find it a very difficult decision to make. If you are driving a car, if you're in charge of a car, and you're faced with an unavoidable choice between two accidents, and maybe there's a mother with a child in a pram or a buggy, and you might run over that child and the mother, Or maybe there's a group of people standing on the other side of the road. You know, you might plow into them and hurt or kill one of them. Now, how do you make the choice, given that you have to make the choice between one or the other? How does any of us actually make that choice? Now, in a sense, the choices that we might expect robots and AI-guided mechanisms to make are no different from those choices. It's just that somehow we have to give them the tools, we have to give them the mechanism to be able to make choices which we would recognize as, in some sense, moral.
It would almost seem like there would be perhaps a tendency in those in developing those moral systems to be exclusively, you know, utilitarian, which brings the greatest, which brings the greatest loss of life, or does some sort of a calculus, which that can be a little unnerving in and of itself, because, I think utilitarianism is largely incompatible with a Christian ethic.
Yes, and the other problem with utilitarianism is that it's impossible to foresee every possible outcome of every possible situation. So you can't actually program a robot to do what you think it ought to do in every particular situation. I heard a fascinating lecture back in November from a roboticist at Oxford University, who suggested that robots would need to develop their own moral character. And what will need to happen is that they'll need to be given principles, and then they'll need to learn, as human beings learn, the moral implications of their actions. And he suggested it would be necessary to develop robots of good character.
You know, that's fascinating in and of itself, you know, to think about robots in those kind of terms. But people who are a lot smarter than me, I mean, they're talking about this sort of thing.
They really are. They really are talking about it, and they have to talk about it because of the speed at which things are advancing in this area, and the increasing capabilities of what our machines, the machines that we actually make, are capable of. It's a fascinating area to think about, and frankly, I think people are just scratching the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you write here toward the end of the piece, very well written, but one thing people of faith want to affirm most strongly is that technology has to serve the good of humanity, all of it, not just the privileged few. So that there has to be that sense of human flourishing, I guess, at the heart of these decisions.
I think that's really important. It's fascinating to speculate, and I'm a lifelong lover of science fiction, and science fiction writers have always toyed with this idea that robots and artificial intelligence might become so much indistinguishable from human beings that it makes sense to talk of them as human beings, in a sense, with their own moral personality and their own moral attributes and so on and so forth. But I think from a Christian point of view, we would always want to affirm that there is something unique, there is something special about human beings, and that however far artificial intelligence develops, there's always going to be a difference between us and the things which ultimately we have made.
You know, it's interesting, too. I mean, I guess we have to think about things like transhumanism, too, where you have almost a combination of the human person and a robot, which is also part of the technological advances. So, unfortunately, we're out of time. Reverend Mark Woods, thanks for taking time, and thanks for your great work in Christian Century.
Thanks very much. Good to talk to you.
All right. Love to have you on again sometime. We'll be back in just a minute here on the Mike Allen Show with Amy Howe. Amy, who is a veteran watcher of the Supreme Court, writes with SCOTUS blog, also an attorney. She'll be breaking down the potential three picks for the Supreme Court by Donald Trump. We'll be back in a minute. 573-4BREAD-4. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
right at the bottom of the hour. Welcome back into the Mike Allen Show here on this Monday, the 30th of January. Asking a question of the day, if you want to chime in on social media, Facebook or Twitter. Have you ever broken an object or even broken a bone in anger over a sporting event? My guest, Amy Howe, who is with us now, a big Tar Heel fan, UNC grad, inspired by her coach, Roy Williams, who for the first time in his career, I think, threw a chair this weekend. Amy, good morning.
Good morning. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, and of course, Amy, you serve as the editor and as a reporter, or you have served as editor and reporter for SCOTUS blog. You've got your own blog, Howe on the Court, longtime court watcher, and of course, a lawyer yourself, also a master's degree in Arab studies, very well-rounded and good perspective here. So from what I gather, Amy, most experts are saying, you know, Donald Trump, the president's supposed to announce this Thursday his Supreme Court nominee, and it's basically down to three candidates, most people think?
That's right. And the president has said that he's had someone in mind for a while, but obviously none of us know who that is. There are three candidates. I think they're all you know, easily described as conservative, but they're all very different people. So it would be very interesting to see who the president chooses, because each would bring a different perspective from a different part of the country to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and of course, we're in a limited amount of time. I'm sure we can't get into great detail on each of them, but the three that you're talking about are Judge William Pryor of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, Judge Neil Gorsuch of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit, and Judge Thomas Hardiman of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 3rd Circuit.
That's right. You know, Hardiman has a sort of pull-yourself-up-by-the-bootstraps story that could appeal to Trump. He was the first person in his family to go to college, and then he mostly financed his law school education by going home first to drive a taxi. His father ran a taxi company. And he practiced in Washington for a couple of years, but then went to Pittsburgh, where his wife's family is from, and became active in Republican politics there, and then became a federal district judge, federal trial court judge at a young age, and then was named to the Court of Appeals also at a very young age, I think at 41. He wasn't on the top of most people's names if you'd asked sort of who the Trump shortlist might be, but we think he may have an important ally. One of the other judges on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit is a judge named Marianne Trump Barry, who's Donald Trump's sister. So he could, you know, we don't know, but he could have a very important inside support. William Pryor is a conservative favorite. He's called Roe versus Wade an abomination. He is a protege of Senator Jeff Sessions, who is the president's nominee to serve as attorney general. There was some sort of grumblings from the right, actually, when it seemed that he was one of the front runners, because he was part of a panel of three judges that ruled in favor of a transgender woman who alleged that she'd been fired because of her transition from a man to a woman. You know, I think that I think that he is solidly conservative. I think that the real question with Pryor is whether or not the president wants the fight that would come if he were to nominate Pryor. And there may be a calculation in the president's mind that he can achieve much the same thing, a very solidly conservative justice, by nominating either Hardiman or Neil Gorsuch, who's a judge, as you said, on the 10th Circuit. He sits in Colorado. He spent a good chunk of his career in Washington, actually. His mother was an EPA administrator under President Ronald Reagan, and he returned to Washington after law school. He's got some very sterling academic credentials. He went to Columbia University for undergrad, to Harvard for law school, and then also did a doctorate in legal philosophy at Oxford. He practiced in Washington and was part of the Bush administration, George W. Bush administration, Department of Justice, before becoming a judge on the 10th Circuit. He was actually part of the majority in the case brought by Hobby Lobby challenging the requirement under the Affordable Care Act that employers must provide their female employees with health care that includes access to birth control. he was part of the 10th Circuit that ruled for the employer, saying that this is a strongly held religious belief of these companies, and they shouldn't have to do this. The government should come up with some sort of accommodation. And so I think that will certainly give conservatives a lot of comfort that he's been quite protective of religious liberties.
A couple of questions. We're here with Amy Howe, who blogs at Howe on the Court, also writes for SCOTUS blog. Much has been made of the religious makeup of the Supreme Court, that you've got five Catholics and you've got three Jews on the court. Is there any knowledge on these three candidates and their religious affiliation?
Sure. Pryor is Catholic. He is the son of two Catholic school teachers. Gorsuch attended Georgetown Preparatory School in Washington, which is a Catholic all-boys school when he was in high school. So I have not seen anything confirming that he's Catholic, but I believe that he is. And then Hardiman is, I believe, Catholic as well. So this would keep that balance. You know, Justice Scalia was a very devout Catholic, and this would continue, you know, the preponderance of Catholics on the Supreme Court.
You know, I have a lot of, just full disclosure, I didn't vote for either major party candidate in this election. I just couldn't bring myself to it. But I do have a lot of friends who, you know, consider themselves social conservatives, and that even though there were things about the current president during the campaign that troubled them, their rationalization was, well, it's all about the Supreme Court. He's going to appoint conservative justices and so forth. Would you say that all three of these for social conservatives would be satisfying picks? Are there any potential, let's say, suitors in this group who end up kind of taking a different path than maybe people expected?
I don't think, you know, that has been a rallying cry for many years now, no more suitors. I don't think that any of these are going to have the jurisprudence that David Souter would. I think they'd be solidly conservative. Hardiman is probably the one that we know the least about. You know, he hasn't, for example, had any cases directly involving abortion, in part because he is a judge in a circuit that has a lot of blue states, and there just haven't been necessarily challenges coming out of New Jersey or Delaware or Pennsylvania to abortion laws. He has been very solid, though, on another issue that I think many social conservatives feel strongly about, which is gun rights. He wrote a decision, dissented from a decision that upheld a New Jersey law that puts a lot of restrictions on someone's ability to carry a gun, to get a permit to carry a concealed weapon. So I think Hardiman is probably the one that we know the least about, but I don't think that there are any David Souters in this group now.
Would you say, would they all equally be likely to be confirmed, or do you think there is any sort of order of priority in terms of how the Senate would react?
I think that's two separate questions. I think that whoever the president nominates, you know, of these three will be confirmed. They're all, you know, undoubtedly well qualified, and the Senate has a majority of Republicans. The Republicans have suggested that they are willing to go with the so-called nuclear option so that they can get someone confirmed, even if they don't have the votes to overcome a filibuster. I think it's more a question of sort of how much capital the president wants to invest in this fight. I think that Gorsuch in particular, because of his, I think that it's, you may disagree with some of Gorsuch's views, and I imagine many Democratic senators would, but it's really hard to argue that he is not well suited to be on the Supreme Court. And with the kind of credentials that he has, you know, having spent some time in Washington, I imagine he'll have sort of bipartisan support from, you know, some of the lawyers who practice before the Supreme Court. I think Hardiman would also, there's just not a lot there that would give Senate Democrats much of a target to work with other than his opinion in gun rights cases. I think Pryor could be confirmed, no doubt, but would be more of a fight because there's just, he has a longer paper trail on issues that Senate Democrats are going to care about, on issues like abortion and same-sex marriage, and there's just much more to point to, even if he would ultimately be confirmed.
Do you hear, last question I'll ask you, Amy, and I really appreciate your time this morning. Any rumblings on whether we could have any more retirements on the bench?
You know, that is an interesting question. I think that there is, you know, 0.0 chance that either Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who will be 84 in March, or Stephen Breyer is going to retire voluntarily. So assuming that their health continues to be good, I don't think that we'll see them retire. I think they would both try to stay on in the hope that a Democrat would be elected to president and they could step down then. I think the wild card is Justice Anthony Kennedy. I think there are two schools of thought. One is that, you know, he was appointed by a Republican president and he'll want to step down while a Republican is president to give the Republicans a chance to replace him. I think the other school of thought is that he enjoys his place sort of at this, you know, at the center of the court, and would know that anyone who, you know, Donald Trump or another Republican president would nominate to replace him would be significantly more conservative and could, in fact, undo a lot of the jurisprudence that he's written in his career.
Amy,
so there's no way to know.
Amy, thank you so much. Thanks for your great work, and we'll keep an eye on it. All right, blessings to you and your family. We'll
thank
be back with
too.
More in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show. You are listening to Breadbox Media.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Fifteen minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Really enjoyed that conversation with Amy Howe. It's been a while since we've had her on. Clear thinker. And you know what I like about her and her blog, as well as SCOTUS blog, if you've ever checked that out, I think they really work hard. I'm not saying always successfully. I think Amy always is. Very successful at presenting their viewpoints with very dispassionately. I mean, you really can't get a read on their political leanings. There may be a couple of writers on SCOTUS blog that it's a little bit more obvious. But by and large, I think they do a really good job of just presenting it as it is. And, you know, I've kind of had the same viewpoint toward The Atlantic, even though I'm pretty confident The Atlantic as a journal tilts left. By and large, they do a good job of keeping that under wraps, or at least giving a fair and balanced perspective, even on those they disagree. Now, they did have an exception recently with an article about ultrasounds that was just, I can't believe it got past the editors. It was so biased and poorly researched, and they had to release a whole slew of corrections. So that's the one time recently when The Atlantic kind of let me down, but otherwise, good work for SCOTUS blog. Interesting, and those of you if you voted for Donald Trump because it was all about the Supreme Court, that you didn't care about anything else except the Supreme Court, I'd say you probably have to be heartened a little bit by the picks that are being bandied about, and the three that Amy mentioned, all three solid conservatives. My question is, who has the president's ear on this? I mean, obviously, come on. I mean, Donald Trump, jurisprudence is probably not in his wheelhouse. So who has his ear, I think, is the important question on these nominations, which is true about, I guess, but you could say about any president. Anyway, our question of the day, inspired by a couple of sporting moments this weekend in which people let the let their anger get the better of them. Roy Williams, I think, you know, Roy Williams has got to be, what, 65 years old, I would say, and he throwing a chair in a home loss to Miami, and then which dropped the, let's see, what, yeah, that snapped their 7-game winning streak. And then you have Enos Kanter for the Oklahoma City Thunder, who I know because he at least was on the bench at the University of Kentucky, even though eligibility issues kept him off the court. But Kanter punched a chair Thursday, and it caused him to fracture his forearm So my question is, have you ever broken an object or broken a bone even in anger over a sporting event? Some remarks we've gotten on Facebook and social media is always a possibility. Either through Facebook or Twitter, Mike Allen Show, the handle, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or call or text 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4, on this very pressing question. A couple of remarks that I've gotten here. Let's see. Todd makes the remark that Roy Williams was Bob Knighton. Yeah, except at least Roy kept the chair where he was. It didn't go slinging across the court. Kathy says, not broken anything that's or thrown anything, but I used to go to the hockey game, and my voice left me for 2 or 3 or 4 days. My doctor told me to ring the bell and stop screaming, I guess. Dave says, I sent a few water bottles flying and broke my stick in a fully justified rage after getting an undeserved penalty from a referee whose myopia was only rivaled by his inbred Cro-Magnon mouth-breathing stupidity. Champaign, Illinois, in a hockey tournament January 1985. Remember it like it was yesterday. The fellow who took the dive and earned me that penalty took some stitches in the third period on an inadvertent elbow, a less-than-Christian moment for me. Never as a spectator, can't see myself ever being that invested in it. I probably have maybe punched a wall, I don't know, over a loss. It's been a while. I did break a putter one time playing golf. Not over my knee. It was obviously not the most well-crafted putter in the world. I was playing with my dad. I mean, I guess I was like 19. And I got mad over a missed putt. And I just swung my putter really hard in the air. And then when I stopped my hands, the head of the putter just kind of kept on going around to the left. And it broke off. I think I had to putt with a 2-iron the rest of the way. My dad told me, if that ever happens again, I will never play golf with you. So scared me straight just a little bit, but not one of my finer moments. So if you've got one like that, love to hear from you. Confession's good for the soul. Like I said, I can't give you absolution, but you know how it goes. Anyway, back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the hour. Yesterday's Beatitudes gospel reading, as I said, we read these, like we do so many things from the Gospels. We read them both in the hindsight of 2,000 years of church history. We also read them through a certain religious lens in which we, you know, hear these words almost detached from the world that we live in. We imagine Jesus in this sort of pale face and British accent saying, blessed are the poor in spirit. And we nod our heads, amen, the word of the Lord, so forth, the gospel of the Lord. The truth is we don't agree by and large with these words. And I'm not saying you, I'm saying me. I mean, the people that we admire, the people that we look up to, the people we want to be like are not the poor in spirit, are not those who mourn. They're not the ones who are meek. They're not the merciful. They're the powerful. They're the rich, the beautiful, those who get their way. We just elected a president who is the quintessential expression of that. He's a winner. And as I said, my opinion, the danger is of where we are, that we are so wrapped up as pro-life Catholics, as Christians, we're so wrapped up and glad to finally be winners and finally be able to stick it to those liberals that have kept us down that we turn a blind eye to some of the very troubling aspects of this presidential administration and this usurpation in many ways. And this has been happening, this usurpation of the separation of powers. I was thinking about this yesterday. I was actually talking to a guy after Mass who's a Republican politician. He recently ran for state house. It occurred to me in thinking about this tumultuous first week of Donald Trump's presidency I mean, because say what you will, the guy has come in and set his own tone, no doubt, flanked on the one side by Steve Bannon, who I think is having a much bigger influence than people even realize. But he's come in, executive order, executive order, executive order, and it just occurred to me, we've really lost, and this has not just happened, because this was growing under Bush and then Obama and now reaching full fruit in President Trump. I mean, basic middle school, junior high civics, right? The president enforces the law, the legislative branch makes the laws, and the court interprets the laws. Where's the legislative branch? I mean, the president's making laws. Now, liberals loved it when they had one of their own. Now they decry it. I think we should all decry it, no matter who it is, because it really is, can be a short path to tyranny, in my opinion. The other thing I wanted to mention, we'll do it very briefly. I'm going to be adjusting to this new one-hour show, today's gospel reading, a very interesting one, the story of Jesus encountering the demoniac, which, let me tell you, is one of the most haunting stories in the Gospel of Mark. This man who is possessed with a multitude of demons, Jesus, away from Israel, across the lake, encounters this guy, heals him, sets him free. Maybe we'll get into this a little bit more tomorrow. Sends the demons into a herd of swine. My high school class reading this passage were like, why did he kill 2,000 pigs? And the reaction of the people who saw this happen, scared as they were, I'm sure, of the demoniac, they were more scared of Jesus. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit more tomorrow. Let's spin the dollar catechism wheel. We'll go to random.org, our random number generator. We'll spit up, see what this great repository of the truth has to say to us. 1477. This is about the communion of saints. This treasury includes as well the prayers and good works of the Blessed Virgin Mary. They are truly immense, unfathomable, and even pristine in their value before God. In the treasury, too, are the prayers and good works of all the saints, all those who have followed in the footsteps of Christ the Lord, and by His grace have made their lives holy and carried out the mission the Father entrusted to them. In this way, they attained their own salvation and at the same time cooperated in saving their brothers in the unity of the mystical body. I love that last phrase, the mystical body. When we become part of this church, we become part of a something beyond ourselves. And our behaviors, our acts of righteousness, moved, of course, by grace, because it's all God's grace. Sola gratia, we Catholics affirm that. Any good we do is because of the prompting of God, but He gives us the privilege from the Blessed Virgin Mary down through the saints and even ourselves in participating in His great redeeming work. He is the capital R Redeemer, but our actions count. They are true merit because they're united ultimately with His great and sufficient saving work. Tomorrow, maybe we'll talk about a little bit the cloud of witnesses which surround us and cheer us on. Praise God for them. We'll be back tomorrow. This is the Mike Allen Show. You are listening to Breadbox Media. Learn more about us, breadboxmedia.com. We'll be back tomorrow by God's grace. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.